Grief, a natural response to losing someone or something that's important to you. It is one of my biggest fears, and I struggle with even just the thought of losing someone I care about. Today I'm speaking with Ashley Melke, registered psychologist, advanced certified grief recovery specialist, about how she helps empower others to find the resilience within them to cope with what is, in my opinion, life's biggest challenge, grieving. Ashley, welcome to the Anything But Simple Talk podcast. I am so excited and happy to have you here.
Thank you, Susie. It is my honor and privilege. Thank you for having me.
We are talking about a topic that, to me, I still struggle with, and I think it's just such a blessing for me personally to learn from you and to maybe feel a little bit more healed or find different ways that I can help myself. So this is a little bit of a selfish one, but I know I'm not alone. I know that so many people struggle with grieving. And I want to start with asking you, what is the definition of grieving?
Okay, and before I define that, I first want to just acknowledge what you said, Susie, which is so permission giving for me, for everyone, because grief is universal. It's one of those experiences that deeply connects every single one of us. So thank you for starting out by sharing that this is also going to be helpful for you. So let's define grief. There are many definitions of grief. The simple one is it's the normal and natural response to loss. Now, there's a more wordy definition, but it's important to share because it really highlights the significant number of losses that can create the feelings of grief. So, it is the conflicting feelings caused by the end or change in a familiar pattern of behavior. So, anytime we have conflicting feelings as a result of the end or change in a familiar pattern of behavior, there's the potential to grieve. So, one of the most obvious losses that we've collectively experienced is COVID.
Very true.
Yes. So that's just one example of so many examples of the losses that we can experience that can create the feelings of grief.
Absolutely. And then there's all this talk about the different stages of grieving. And even like when I've, you know, lost somebody, they ask like, what stage are you in? Oh, are you reverting back to this stage? And they like, is this a real thing? And can you actually go back and experience all of these stages all over again?
So this is one of the biggest pieces of misinformation, is that there are stages of grief. And we were all taught it. I was taught it in graduate school, studying to become a psychologist.
Wow.
Like it actually blows my mind that this is the training we receive. But it is important to debunk that misinformation. The stages of grief came from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her work. She's a psychiatrist. Her work with the death and dying. And here's these, you know, beautiful stages of grief, which are stages of death and dying, that she even said, we do not experience in a linear fashion. And David Kessler in his work, even who he worked very closely with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, says that we cannot stick messy emotions into neatly organized boxes. So I just want to say that there are no stages of grief. Grief is unique and individual to every single one of us. There are no responses that are so common that everyone will have them, which is so relieving and validating for people who are grieving, because then you can let go of that expectation of what you know, should be feeling or what this process is going to look like after your loss.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because it kind of makes me think about like, it's easier to obviously think that there are these stages and you're going to go through these stages, and then once that's done, you'll feel better. But obviously it makes sense when you put it that way, that that's not really what happens. Right.
Exactly. So as I like to explain in the work with my clients and in trainings and workshops, talking about grief is every relationship is unique and individual. And so every grieving person is unique and individual. We're going to grieve different things based on different relationships. And it's often this accumulation of undelivered communications in a relationship that we grieve.
Yeah.
Things that we wish were better, different, more, hopes and dreams, expectations for the future. And all of that's going to create various emotions. So it is important just to remind people that whatever they're feeling is totally natural and normal, and there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah, so that kind of leads me right into the next question, which is, there's people out there who it's been years, and I can vouch for myself. I'm one of those people. It's been so long that even just the thought of that person, or, you know, they sometimes they say it's good for you to talk out loud to that person, but I can't even get the words out. I just break down when I remember they're gone. So when it's been so long and you're still feeling this, like it's just happened yesterday, and you're kind of like, why is this still happening to me? Why do you think it is? And how can we get through it? Because I know we'll never get over it, but get through that.
Absolutely. It is about getting through and moving forward rather than moving on and forgetting and pretending like it didn't happen. One of the biggest myths of grief is time heals all wounds. Mm. So we've been taught to just give it time. And then we usually throw in busyness, right? Keep busy and give it time. And then eventually everything will be healed. But it's like a festering wound on your arm. If we let this wound fester and we don't take care of it, right, we don't get medication for it, it's going to still fester, whether it's been a day or a month or a year. It's going to continue to stay infected. It's the same thing with our grief. So as I mentioned earlier, it's this accumulation of undelivered communications in our relationships that keep us stuck. It's the things that we wish we had done differently, better, or more. And the hopes, dreams, and expectations that we feel robbed of in that relationship that keep us stuck. So without taking action to heal what's unfinished, we could wait 50 years. I have worked with clients, Susie, where it's been 50 plus years, longer than we've been alive. And they still feel pain when they think about their loss because time has nothing to do with it.
So would you say that maybe like remorse and regret, does that make it impact it more? Because you know what, if you had like a great relationship and you just miss that person, miss having them there, but then there's that opposite where you're like, I wish I had done this. I wish I had said that. What about like, so do you think that, I don't want to say makes it harder because I mean, I feel like it's not fair to say that it makes it harder, but that regret and remorse people hold on to, is it make it a little more challenging to kind of go on?
I would say it is a really important factor to consider is the regret that we carry. Absolutely. Now, I do want to normalize and validate anyone who's listening who is carrying feelings of regret or even guilt, is that that's normal, right? Relationships are not perfect. We don't actually prepare ourselves for when someone dies, and especially if they die tragically and suddenly. And so this is why it's so important for us in real time to reflect on all of the communications we want to share in our living relationships.
Yes.
The things that we need to say and do and the apologies we want to make and the forgiveness we want to offer so that when someone dies, we aren't left carrying all of that regret. But yes, it's normal. It's normal for all of us to feel some sort of regret when a relationship ends.
Yeah. And then there's also the guilt you feel when you do move on or you do kind of forget about that person. You're not really forgetting. You're just living your life again, which is what you have to do. But sometimes you could feel bad about that. Like, oh, if they're watching me now, they think I forgot them. Or you feel so guilty that you look so good and you're so happy to the outside. And people are thinking, oh, he or she doesn't even miss that person anymore, which is awful, but you know.
Totally. And it's so untrue because it's possible to feel both. It's like walking two paths at the same time. Imagine two parallel roadways. One roadway is this path of grief and grieving and saying goodbye to what's over, and then me also showing up and living my life. And that's how most grievers identify, is I'm living sort of two lives at the same time. And I also want to say that, you know, I think culturally too, we've been taught that love equals pain.
That's right.
Not pain equals pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Love doesn't equal pain at all. So we need to just like toss that one out because it's not true. You can both miss someone, whether it's a death or a divorce or an estrangement, you can miss them and have fond memories, but also show up and live your life. And In fact, when we do our healing work in a relationship, we actually get to bring all the fond memories and all the good stuff forward. We can actually, like you said, we can talk about them, think about them, share memories without it turning painful. And that's one of the benefits of doing work like the grief recovery method. That's the program that changed my life, or other grief healing programs that are out there.
Yeah, that sounds very, very important to do, because maybe I need to look into that, because I, like I said, I can't even say like somebody I've loved's name without freaking out and like going down this rabbit hole of sadness. And for me, I don't have like the regret or the remorse, thankfully. It's just the missing, like the hurt of not having that person, to the point where sometimes I pick up the phone and I would like try calling that person as if like they're going to answer. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, how did I just do that? It's been so many years. But you know, you reach out to the person you miss when they're gone.
Totally. And I just want to validate your feelings, Susie, that it's, I don't think we ever come to a place where it's okay with us that someone has died, that we're okay with it. It's normal to miss our loved ones. It's normal to have sad feelings. Mm-hmm. That's a part of being human. But we can certainly look at what are the parts of this relationship that are causing me pain, and what action can I take to heal that pain so that I can allow myself to feel all the feelings when I think about this person, joy and happiness and sadness and fondness and
yeah,
everything.
What about, and this just came to me, but like, what about the different ways people die? How does that affect grieving? Like when you mentioned, when it's suddenly with a trauma, or if it's like a long death where they're suffering for a long time, what do those different kinds of deaths mean for the grieving process for somebody?
Such a great question. How we approach working with a grieving person is we really focus on the emotional impact of the loss. Whereas how someone died is the facts. That's sort of like the intellectual way that someone died, whether it was cancer or a car accident or a natural death or suicide. That's the facts. What we want to know is, how does that impact you emotionally? Whether it was your loved one died from cancer or suicide or whatever the cause, how does that impact you emotionally? And again, every relationship is unique and individual. So we can never predict how someone's going to respond to someone's loss, even if there's a parallel loss. So my dad died by suicide in 2010. And
so sorry.
I've worked with probably hundreds of individuals who have grieved a loved one to suicide. And not one story is the same. Not one relationship is the same. So yes, the parallel is they died by the same cause, but that's just one piece of the story, one piece of the relationship. It doesn't define the person or the relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And then maybe like, do you find that though, that people who have like lost a loved one to cancer or suicide, that can have a greater comfort in like a support group that has other people who understand that kind of loss?
Yes, absolutely. There are really great support programs available where you can connect with someone who understands on a level that maybe someone else doesn't. Now, the one caution that I always have in going into a support group is there can be a tendency around comparison of loss. So we want to be really mindful of that, that sometimes when we get into a space where everybody's grieving the same type of loss, there could be a comparison. So this is common with like a widows or widowers group, where maybe someone, there's a young widow and they lost their partner. They were only married for 2 years, as opposed to the person next to them who's grieving their spouse of 40 years.
Okay, yeah.
So we don't create groups at the Grief and Trauma Healing Center based on type of loss. We say all grievers are welcome because every loss is unique and individual. And nobody will know what it's like for you.
Exactly.
To grieve your loss.
Exactly. I agree with that a lot, especially when it's like I remember losing somebody who maybe other people didn't realize it would affect me as much, and maybe I didn't even realize it would, but once that person's gone, it's something you it just hits you differently when they're actually gone and you realize maybe you were closer to that person than you thought, or maybe that person did leave an impact on you that you didn't realize until they were gone, which is obviously painful. But from the outside, people could be like, but why are you so upset about this? Right? And they're questioning, but you're right. We all grieve differently. And at the end of the day, we have to respect that. Like when you say that whole marriage thing, I would never look at it that way, but I can see how somebody else would and be like, how it was only 2 years for you. So that is very good advice if you are joining a grief group to take into consideration.
Absolutely. And that we only know our pain. I only know my pain, and my pain feels like the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody's pain is the worst pain. Whether you're grieving because you had a divorce, or there was a death in the family, or it was a job loss, or maybe it was your beloved pet.
Yes.
I cannot tell you, Susie, how many people we've worked with where their most special, intimate, loving relationship was with their pet. And it was the closest relationship they ever had.
Oh, yeah.
And, right? Like, it's so important to honor our unique experience, regardless of what it is.
I'm so glad you mentioned pets, because I miss my dog so much to the point where I don't ever want another dog. I got a pet during COVID, and I was like, it was for my kids. I didn't want it just because of the loss, because I knew that pain that I still carry. And I was like, I never want to feel that again. And I feel like I almost, like, I don't want to say traumatized my kids, but I definitely influenced them, because to the point where if someone would be like, wouldn't you want a pet? They would say no, because it's going to die and I'm going to get sad. Like, how terrible, you know? So I had to turn that around. I realized quickly that that was not good advice. And we decided to get a pet, and we have the conversation, you know, one day Rex will not be with us, but we're going to give him a good life while he's here. And we'll miss him when he's gone. Like, I completely understand. But I will say, I refuse to get super close to him, because I don't want to. I don't know if that will help. But I'm like, I love you, but I'm not going to get that close, because I'm scared of the pain for when you leave my life, you know?
Totally. Because it hurts. It hurts so bad.
It really does.
And we can't protect ourselves and our children from pain. We can't. It's a part of life, but we can, like you said, Susie, which it sounds like you did so intuitively, we can have the conversations on how to prepare them and how to support them when they do experience a loss. I think that's such an important job that we have as parents.
Yes, that was going to be my next question, was how do children experience grief? How is it different? And how do you help children through it? It must be so terribly hard.
Well, it's interesting, because children are much better grievers than we are. Because by this age, we've already learned to really intellectualize our grief, avoid it, escape from it, numb out from it, right? We just sort of like, we compartmentalize it and put it away. Whereas children, they're like this beautiful processing plant for feelings. I know my son, he's 4.5. When he has a feeling, he is feeling it. There is no emotional baggage there.
Yeah.
Like you hear it, you see it. And so children are actually really good processing plants. So we might see that they're exhausted. We might see that they're isolating. We might see them crying a lot, asking a lot of questions. They might be more irritable, probably have some changes in eating and sleeping routines, all really normal signs of grief. And our job, and I know a lot of parents don't like to hear this, but it is important. Our job is to set the emotional tone for our children. We set the tone, and so we have to go first. They need a model. So we might say, you know, Johnny, we know grandma died, and I'm really sad. I'm really sad that grandma died. I really miss going to her house and, you know, eating her special cookies and having coffee with grandma. What about you? How do you feel? What do you miss about grandma? So us going first is really important to plant the seeds, to get them talking when they're ready to do that, and allow them to do what they need to do to process those feelings.
I could cry just hearing you say that, talking to Johnny. Okay, like that's the problem. Like for me, I wear my heart on my sleeve, and it's so hard for me to be that, to be that bigger person. Like I know one day my parents are going to pass. And the fact that I have children, thankfully, is kind of that strength that you kind of have to find for them. But I feel like I would just be a mess and they would just see me a mess. So you kind of have to put your feelings aside, or at least not show them that part, and just model the right behavior and not let that, right?
Well, I have to disagree with
okay,
you,
okay, good. Please do it. Tell me what to do.
That is one of the misinformations. And it's not just you. It's all of us. It's like this very counterintuitive way of showing up for our kids, because we are taught another misinformation, another myth, to be strong. I have to be strong for my kids. But if we're acting strong, what we're teaching our children is they have to be strong. Mm-hmm. So as uncomfortable as it feels, allowing our children to see our vulnerability in our tears and to see that sadness is actually really normal, healthy human emotion, it gives them permission to do the same. So I see mommy crying, then it makes it okay for me to cry. And then, one second later, everybody's crying because
yeah,
there's somebody was willing to go first. So as scary as it can feel, but take it in strides, right? Do it. I mean, it's something that most of us are not comfortable doing. And so we don't need to dive all the way into the grief swimming pool, but just to like dip our toes or kind of sit on the edge of the pool, put your legs in, show a bit of emotion, and then pull back. But it is an important modeling for our children if we want them to get comfortable and familiar with their sadness, which again is a normal human experience.
Yeah. So but you have to kind of find that balance, right? You don't want to like completely be in shambles, or is it okay to? I mean, it's hard. It's so hard to have that balance once you turn on the faucet, I feel like. Because when I grew up, so you touched on the cultural. I'm European, and we're like my mother, like for example, when she lost her parents, she was like, it was inconsolable, which is completely understandable, and that's how I saw that and I understood that. But then I had like with her showing me like the guilt where you have to wear black. If you don't wear black, then everyone thinks you're not grieving, everyone thinks you're over it, you can't go out, you can't do anything, and that's how you show your love and honor for that person. So what about when two worlds collide? So I still have, thankfully, luckily, my parents are still both alive. So if someone were to pass away now, how do you kind of teach your child your way while still respecting, you know, the elders and their way?
I think that's such an individual decision and process where you would want to do some deep reflection on what are the values that are really important in my culture. And that could be cultural beliefs, that could be religious beliefs, it could be special ways of mourning that are important. We want to consider those as well as how I desire to show up for my children, because you are a different person and you probably do have maybe some different values than your parents do. So finding that balance that feels good for you is important. And that's what I would encourage for anyone. And to give yourself permission to also not share your feelings. Like, you know what? There's no wrong way that we can do grief. And oftentimes we think, are we doing this wrong? But it's like, it's kind of giving yourself permission as well to take a break.
Yeah.
If you need to, from your grief.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's just so much value in someone who is grieving to speak to somebody like you, right? An outside point of view, someone who you can just turn to with no judgment. You know, sometimes it's hard to turn to your family, or you don't want to make them more sad, or they're going through their own thing. You don't really want to. There's certain things you could just say to someone you don't really know as opposed to your family. And then you can give tips to them that they can bring to their family as well.
Absolutely. Grieving people want to feel heard and seen and witnessed in their pain. And I think, you know, us, the grief psychologists and grief counselors, we have such a humble privilege of bearing witness to our clients and their stories without judgment, and having that sort of safe, I think of it as like the safe container or the safe space for them to show up in all of their feelings and all their vulnerability and all their fears, to talk about their loved one, to talk about their pain. And then when they're ready, to take new action to take action to heal what's unfinished in that relationship so they can move forward with meaning and purpose and hope for the future.
Yeah. And then parents who lose their children. That is like, I have two family members who have lost children. And I mean, I don't want to compare pains because there is no comparison. Like you said, everyone's pain is the worst. But like, I have never seen or felt a pain from someone like I have felt of these people who've lost a child. And do you find that it's harder? Like, what kind of advice can you give to someone who's lost a child and that pain they feel that really I can't even put into words?
Yeah, it is. It's devastating and crushing and unimaginable for us who are parents who haven't had that experience to think, I mean, that's your heartbeat. That's your heart walking outside of your body. And I know I feel incredibly vulnerable with my son that, you know, nightmares of awful things happening to him because I think it's my greatest fear.
Yeah.
And it does happen. It does happen. And my advice to them would be the same. Give yourself permission to feel. Take the time that you need. Ask for help where you can get help. Right? Because often those first days, weeks, months, sometimes years, it's just survival. I just need to survive today. And maybe there's one task today that I can do for myself. But everybody's on their own journey. So it's, you know, they're letting go of that expectation of what it's going to look like in a month or 6 months or a year, because everyone's experience is so different. And of course, if you're looking for support, if you find that, you know, how you're feeling is sort of exceeding your capacity to cope, then you want to consider working with a professional just to even help provide coping skills and grounding skills to get through the day as a starting point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. What about people who feel like they're worried that they're going to forget their loved one? What do you say to someone who says that? Like, I feel like I'm going to forget their voice, or even if they have forgotten their voice.
I would say it is impossible to forget your loved one. It is impossible. Now, what happens though, when we are stuck in pain, pain becomes this shield from the fond memories and all the sweet stuff in the relationship. So by healing the pain of that loss and healing what's unfinished in your relationship, then you actually have more access to the things that you desire, which is the fond memories, the good times, the laughter, the stories. So it's actually a benefit. It's actually a benefit to do the healing work in that relationship so you can take all that good stuff with you and not just be stuck in pain.
Yeah. Do you think people are ever the same after they've lost someone? I mean, truly. Do you think that you just change forever and you're never truly that same person again? Or is that also a myth?
I think that grief and loss does shape and change who we are. And it doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing or a negative thing. Often these experiences invite us into deeper meaning and purpose in our lives, into other callings and other passions. And so again, it's going to be different for every person, but I think it does change us forever.
Yeah, I think so too. I just like, as we're talking, which is so amazing, because I always see, ever since my aunt, my godmother, who passed away, is the person that I was the closest with that I lost, other than my dog. And every time when she passed away, I would always see a red cardinal. That was just, you know, they say that they're a symbol of someone visiting you, which I truly believe. Maybe that's just a comfort I give myself, but it does make me feel comfort. And as you're talking, I just saw a cardinal fly outside my window.
I know.
I wish you could see it. Yeah. So I just feel like I believe in those signs and things that happen for a reason. So like as you were talking and saying that, I just saw a cardinal. I think that's so special.
It's so beautiful. She's here and she's with you and she's listening. And oh,
I know.
That really touches my heart. That's amazing.
Yeah. And she always, like, that symbol always comes to me when I feel lost, or like it's just a sign always when I feel sad. Actually, you know, I found a few months back now, I found a note that was in a book that was just a little paper that said, like, I love you, and her name on it, like just written. So she loved writing. So maybe it's something I inherited from her, but it was just like right there. Actually, it says, I love you, Susie. It has my name on it. So I keep that forever. And I just feel like those special signs to just let you know that that person is there, they're thinking of you, or they're watching over you, whatever comfort, like that's comfort to me, maybe not to everybody, but it gives me so much comfort. I don't look for signs, but they're always there and they give me a lot of comfort.
That's amazing and so beautiful that you have that as an anchor and a connection to her. That's amazing. And I don't think it's any mistake that there's these red cardinals and that note saying that she loves you as a reminder of exactly that, that she is with you. She may not be physically here, but spiritually she is with you. And for anyone else, you know, to reflect on other spiritual or religious anchors that they can hold on to as well, about maybe an afterlife or another connection with their loved one after this life. That can be so comforting as well.
Yeah, you do what you have to do to get by at sometimes, right? It's not a one size fits all for all of us. And to the point now that like when I go see someone who's lost someone, it's like I don't even know what the right words are to say at this point. I mean, before, you know, you would hug someone and you'd say, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I hate that. I hate that sentence. And actually, I should ask you, like, what is the right thing to say to someone after they've lost a loved one?
Well, again, I want to say there isn't necessarily like a right thing to say. It's really how you show up. Show up like a heart with ears. That's the analogy that we love to use. Be a heart with ears, no mouth, and listen. And you might say, if that's genuine for you, I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. Or something like, you know, I can't imagine how painful this has been for you. How can I best support you? Is it okay if I check in on you? Mm-hmm. It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Or something like, your feelings are safe here. We can say those things. And sometimes it's just silence and saying, would you like a hug?
Yeah. Because there's nothing that you can really say, right, to make them feel better, but to just offer to be there for them if they need you. And I always suggest bringing food. Because the last thing that that person wants to do is either think of cooking or even probably eat. But bringing food is always comforting for somebody. I know that for me, I don't even do the flower thing anymore. I do the food. I'll bring them something catered where, or I'll make something from home where they can have at least a meal, or that they don't have to, one less thing to worry about when your mind is in a million places and your heart's in a million pieces.
Absolutely. That's so thoughtful of you. And it actually helps their nervous system as well. It really turns on that rest and digest system. So eating isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Yes.
So to share that, break some bread, have some tears, I think that's wonderful.
I love that. Ashley, thank you so much for being here. This was such an amazing conversation. I appreciate you being here so much.
Thank you. It was such a privilege to have this conversation with you, Susie. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And a fellow Canadian girl too, please give her support. I'm going to put all of her information in the description below. If you want any consultations with her, anything at all, please do not hesitate to reach out. I feel better already just from this conversation. So if she can help in any way, please, please reach out. Thanks for checking out episode 10 of the Anything But Simple Talk podcast. Ashley was so incredibly kind, and I connected so much with her on this topic. Don't forget to like, save, subscribe, and share with a friend. Losing someone we love is so hard. It can almost feel like our heart is literally broken. And it's okay not to be okay. If you feel like you need to talk to someone, don't be ashamed to reach out. You are not alone. And remember, Don't be afraid to be anything but simple. The best people are.